This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning at 7:06 a.m. on Tuesday, the 19th of July. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mukhtar with Philip C. and Wong Xiaoning on what's looking out to be a rather cloudy Tuesday morning, but we'll see if the sun peeks out later in the day. In half an hour, we're going to be discussing the challenges that Sri Lanka faces in rebuilding its economy. But as always, let's kick off the morning with a look at how global markets closed yesterday.
U.S. markets closed in a negative territory. The Dow was down 0.7%. S&P 500 and Nasdaq were down 0.8%. Hang Seng was up 2.7%. Shanghai Composite up 1.6%. Singapore ST up 0.7%. And back home, FBM KLCA was up 0.8%.
So for some thoughts on what's moving markets and why we see a contrast between U.S. and Asian markets yesterday, we have on the line Jeffrey Halley, Senior Market Analyst at Wanda. Jeffrey, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us today. So we saw overnight U.S. stocks lost their positive momentum after Apple announced plans to slow hiring. Is the market worried that even the bellwether of the tech sector is beginning to feel the effects of a slowing economy?
Yeah, I think the markets are very sensitive to this news. We saw the masters of the universe, Goldman Sachs, saying something fairly similar last night as well. And because
sorry, Jeffrey, that was just too good. We can't let that one pass.
I know. I'm in full form on a Tuesday morning, aren't I? Look, there's not a lot of heavy-duty economic news this week. We're in a pre-FOMC blackout with Fed officials as well, so we don't have much to get our teeth into there. So it's very much a market where stock markets will chase their tail back and forth on good news and bad headlines as well. And I think that's what we're seeing overnight. Now, we had a huge session on Friday, and we're seeing a partial reverse of that on tenuous headlines, shall I say, overnight.
Meanwhile, looking at the banking results, Goldman and Bank of, Master of the Universe, a.k.a. Goldman Sachs, Bank of America results were released last evening, both showing a dip in revenue. But was it a surprise to you?
It wasn't really, because I was expecting the investment banking revenues to take a bit of a hit because the SPAC craze is well and truly over. And so, you know, there's less M&A deals going through, less IPOs. And that was always going to impact on them. Their underlying core business, this boring old interest income that banks use to generate their core profits and also their trading revenues, both came out fairly well. And so I don't think it's all bad. It's just that the more cyclical revenue part of their revenue makeup, shall we say, the investment banking side has taken hit, which isn't really a surprise. And that's why I think their stocks actually held up fairly well last night. I think we're going to see more of that from the banks in this quarter.
Oh, Jeff, but I think boring is good, isn't it?
Oh, I think so too. I think banks should be boring. I think we all get quite nervous when things get exciting in banking.
Yeah, but I think one of the biggest challenges, which is not boring now, is China, because we see no shortage of negative news coming out from there. A weaker quarter two GDP growth rate, to mortgage boycotts by borrowers. Why does economic recovery seem to be stalling over there?
I'm not sure if it's so much it's stalling. It's starting from a low base because it's taking a while for China to get back on its feet, so to speak, from all these lockdowns they had earlier in the year, plus the external environment's not looking as sparkly as it once was as well from the export side, although the export machine is still doing very, very well. So I think it's actually just not recovering as fast. I think the markets had really hoped that China would have a V-shaped recovery. I mean, part of this reason is because the Chinese government isn't doing what it's done in the past in slowdowns, which is tell the banks to go out and lend and throw billions and billions of dollars into infrastructure and other stimulus measures. They've been very targeted this time, and I think that is one of the reasons why we haven't seen that V-shaped rebound. This China property market has also been a slow-moving train wreck. It got subsumed in the COVID zero headlines earlier this year, but it never went away. And now we're seeing developers defaulting on domestic, not just international debt. And they've been a bit slow trying to resolve this one. I think they hoped that they could get this one done under the radar, but I guess it's not going to get that way now because now it's starting to hit the Chinese consumer.
And Jeff, we look at the Chinese market, the CSI 300 specifically, right? It has bounced back up 13% from the April lows. But do you think the easy money has been made already and it's going to be really tough for markets to re-rate more significantly?
Yeah, I think so. And I think the main reason that it has rebounded like that is because markets had perceived that we'd been past peak prosperity. We all recall that. That was where they had this huge clampdown on Chinese technology stocks, and their share prices got burnt to the ground, etc. A lot of those gains have been because they've perceived that China had moved past its peak regulatory sort of clampdown on the tech sector. To me, COVID zero still is a huge risks factor there. You know, obviously, we've got this property market stuff coming through, which is moving more towards the headlines. But COVID zero means COVID zero. And I have no doubt whatsoever that China will shut Beijing and Shanghai again if they have to, if cases spiral higher. And I think that threat is going to hang over Chinese markets for the rest of the year.
And if we take a look at Southeast Asian currencies, Jeff, like the ringgit and rupiah, both currencies have weakened quite a bit over the last month against the US dollar. So where do you think these currencies are heading?
Yeah, this one's a little tricky, actually. Now, the Bank of Indonesia has a policy meeting this week on Thursday, and I expect they'll do a minimum of a 0.25 rate hike. They should probably do a half. Both Indonesia and Malaysia have been reluctant rate hikers, and their currencies have suffered accordingly because obviously the United States is hiking quite aggressively and they're going to keep hiking aggressively, and that's pushed the currencies lower. Not just them, but all of Asian currencies we're seeing are still near their recent lows at the moment, and this yield differential is really weighing on them. And we saw out of sequence or surprise rate hikes from the Philippines and also Singapore last week. And I think that Malaysia and Indonesia will have no choice but to follow suit in the near future on that front. On the positive side of everything, and it's easy to get caught up in the bad news, the current accounts, the monthly current accounts for Malaysia and Indonesia are both very, very healthy because of higher commodity prices. So both countries are paying their way in the world very healthily. So it's not all doom and gloom.
But, you know, Jeff, we just went through like US economy challenges, China zero COVID, pressure on emerging markets. So the question here is that Joe Biden is keen to see OPEC Plus vote to increase oil output when they meet later. Will demand justify that?
This is the interesting thing because oil was on the back foot last week. But when I'm looking at the price action overnight, it's risen by like 5%. And that's sort of like a normal intraday range, I suppose, for oil at the moment. And that's on the basis that it looks like Gazprom is putting a force majeure on gas deliveries, which is supposed to restart this Thursday down this Nord Stream 1 pipeline. We haven't seen the end of that story 100% for sure. Look, I think Joe Biden says one thing. He said that he had a constructive meeting with the Saudis and he thought they were going to increase production. The Saudis immediately replied that, well, that's actually up to OPEC Plus. You know, OPEC Plus, the plus is Russia. So I believe right now that Saudi Arabia believes that that plus and OPEC Plus is more important to their place in the world than the US, because obviously they don't want to have an oil price war with Russia again, which made prices collapse. So I don't think he's going to get much joy out of OPEC Plus, but also compliance for OPEC Plus is near 200%. So due to this underinvestment in the oil production sector, OPEC Plus as a grouping, even without these sanctions, is really struggling to even meet the quotas that it has. So the actual underlying supply demand situation in the real market, as opposed to the physical, to the speculative market, is still very, very tight. And that's evidenced by the futures curves that are in backwardation at the moment.
Jeff, thanks as always for the chat. That was Jeffrey Halley, Senior Market Analyst at Owanda, giving us his take on some of the trends that he sees moving markets. If you're interested to hear more about oil markets, we did speak to Wayne Than of Bloomberg NEF yesterday. You can also check out that podcast for more analysis on where oil prices are heading.
And rightfully, the plus is more important than the OPEC.
Maybe so. But turning our attention to some corporate results that came out last night. We talked a lot about the master of the universe, Goldman, but let's talk about another bellwether of the tech sector other than Apple, which is IBM. So their shares slid as much as 4% in extended trading this evening after trimming its 2022 cash forecast. Even though results still beat on the top and bottom lines, revenue did rise 9% year-on-year to $15.5 billion in this quarter. Now, income from continued operations increased by as much as 80% to $1.47 billion. But cash flow, free cash flow, is the part that market's not happy about.
Yeah, because management called for $10 billion in free cash flow for all of 2022, down from the range of $10 to $10.5 billion that it provided in April. Currency, as you said, the Sun Xiaoning negatively impacted IBM's reported revenue by over 6% of growth, or around $900 million. And as a result, gross margin narrowed from 55.2% in the year ago to quarter to 53.4%.
And if you look at segmental revenue, software revenue came in at around $6.2 billion. This was an increase of 6%, but it was still below analyst expectations. I think they expected software to do a lot better. What did do really well, though, was the consulting division that jumped nearly 10%, and the infrastructure unit also contributed up 19%, about $4.2 billion in revenue.
The other bright spot, of course, is hybrid cloud revenue, which everybody wants to be in. Amazon and Microsoft being their big competitors, but their revenue at IBM jumped for that segment 18% to $5.9 billion in that quarter. So a bit of positive news for them, because that's a big market.
It's a big market. I guess the currency question is, MNCs will struggle the most, isn't it? Especially US-based, when their operation cost is in US dollar, but their global markets are in multiple currencies.
Usually they will price it in US dollars to match their cost, right? So the question is, will your customers actually decline, look for
willing
other...
to pay.
Yeah, because... you know, it's gone up by 10% if you use the Bloomberg Spot Index, right? So sometimes it's negative for you.
All right, it's coming up to 7:18 in the morning. We're heading into some messages. And when we come back, what's stopping Malaysian manufacturers from hiring local employees? Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.